Hi again, everybody. I'm Dan Hoard, and this is the Bengals Booth Podcast, the Lousy Timing Edition, as we look back at Cincinnati's 34-7 loss in Minnesota and the pregame report that might have contributed to the Bengals' poor showing. Coming up, you'll get radio replays, locker room interviews with Carlos Dunlap, Giovanni Bernard, and others, and I'll be joined by my broadcast partner Dave Lapham for some postgame analysis. And in this week's Fun Facts segment, I promise you will learn something you never knew about the greatest quarterback in Bengals history, Ken Anderson. All of that is coming up, but here's a reminder that you can have the latest edition of this podcast delivered right to your phone, tablet, or computer by subscribing on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. It's the greatest invention since your own pillow. Perhaps this is just the perspective of somebody that travels quite a bit, but there are few things in life that always deliver, and plopping your head down on your own pillow is definitely on the list. All right, let's get to the game. On Sunday morning in Minneapolis, I climbed onto one of the team buses to head to the stadium and sat down next to Emily Parker, the Bengals' outstanding director of communications. It was about 3 hours before kickoff, and as we were making small talk, she got an alert on her phone, took a peek, and then said, "Oh my gosh," or something to that effect before showing it to me. It was a tweet by Adam Schefter of ESPN that read as follows. After 15 seasons in Cincinnati, Marvin Lewis is planning to leave the Bengals after this season to pursue opportunities elsewhere, league sources tell ESPN. Well, in minutes, that news was spreading like wildfire since almost everybody on the team buses is checking out their phone on the way to the stadium. That report came as a total shock to Mike Brown, the Brown family, Marvin Lewis's coaching staff, and his players, and apparently to Marvin Lewis himself. But that doesn't mean it's not true. My best guess is that Marvin confided in a friend or two that didn't keep his secret. The word got around to Adam Schefter, and here we are. I spoke to Carlos Dunlap about the report and its impact after the game.
Carlos, I think you may have addressed it. I apologize if you did, but when did you learn about the report that Marvin intends to retire at the end of, or move on at the end of this year?
On social media.
Were you shocked?
It's social media. That guy, he tweets rumors, so there's no way to validate that. There wasn't a quote from Coach, but at the end of the day, I had a football game to get ready for, so I don't let the outside stuff distract me. That's how players get hurt.
Did guys start talking about it once that word started?
Everybody talked about it. It's all over the social media, but I didn't go into the game thinking about it.
Do you think it had an impact on how everybody played?
There's no telling. I mean, we played this bad last week, so what was the difference?
Unfortunately, he does have a point. Last week, the Bears scored 27 unanswered points to end the game and beat the Bengals 33-7. On Sunday, the Vikings picked up where Chicago left off by beginning the game with a 75-yard touchdown drive.
He hands it off to Murray, and Murray is brought to the ground, but he spins into the end zone for a Minnesota Vikings touchdown on a one-yard run. Vinny Ray almost stopped him short, but Murray was strong enough to get the ball across the line.
The Bengals are 1-7 this year when the other team scores first. Here's Coach Lewis.
Well, you don't want to play from behind, you know, against the group that's, you know, predicated on being able to rush and do what they do. So that's what the unfortunate part. You want to, you know, play even or in the lead. And you know, we got behind the eight ball.
The eight ball became a wrecking ball on the Bengals' second possession.
Dalton takes the shotgun snap, throws, intercepted at the 31. Kendricks running it back to the 15, the 10, dives for the end zone. Touchdown, Minnesota. A pick six for linebacker Eric Kendricks on a 31-yard return.
A field goal by Kai Forbath made it 17-0 Minnesota at the end of the first quarter, and with the Vikings' strong defense playing in front of the loudest crowd I've ever heard, the game was all but over. Here are Vikings coach Mike Zimmer and Bengals backup quarterback A.J. McCarron.
I thought the fans were ready to go. They were outstanding with the crowd noise today. I think we have the best fans in not only in the NFL but the world.
I mean, it's definitely loud. Communication is tougher. Everything's tougher when a stadium's like this. And, you know, the stadium, the way it's built with the glass, I mean, the sound just bounces off of it. So it just, I mean, it's almost deafening in there.
It's not almost deafening. It is completely deafening. I felt like I spent the day with my head pressed up against a speaker at a heavy metal concert. For the second straight week, the Bengals were crushed by injuries on defense as they were missing all three of their starting linebackers. It wasn't difficult for Minnesota to capitalize.
Keenum drops straight back to throw. Throws for McKinnon, who's wide open at the 43. Cuts back toward the middle of the field to the Bengals 35. Still on his feet at the 30. And finally tackled at the Cincinnati 28 by Will Jackson, who came from across the field to make the tackle. A 41-yard gain on a throw that went downfield about 7 or 8 yards.
Who the hell has the back out of the backfield? You'd have to think it was a linebacker. Again, no coverage on a back just swinging out of the backfield. Linebackers have to know what they're supposed to do.
Running back Jerick McKinnon finished with 7 catches for 114 yards, and I don't think any of his catches came on a ball that was thrown 10 yards downfield by Case Keenum. Here again is Mike Zimmer.
You know, they had a couple linebackers out, and so we were trying to isolate them a little bit on with the running backs, and Case did a good job there.
Keenum was 20 for 23 and had a passer rating of 138.4. Here was his best throw of the day.
His throw toward the end zone, caught, touchdown, Stephon Diggs. And it is 23-0 Minnesota.
The PAT made it 24-0 at the half. Brandon LaFell admits it isn't easy when you're getting blown out for the second straight week.
It's extremely hard. I mean, AJ talked about it on the sideline. It's extremely hard, but you got to find a way to stay motivated. Like, you got to motivate yourself. You can't be looking to the next man. You can't look for the coach for motivation. You got to motivate yourself, man. At the end of the day, you got to play for yourself. You got to have pride, play for your teammates, man. So it's as hard as it is, you got to find a way. And we need to find a way ASAP.
In the third quarter, LaFell did provide the Bengals' biggest offensive play and their only third down conversion in 13 attempts with a 45-yard catch. But he also made a mistake that contributed to Andy Dalton's second interception.
Dalton fakes to Geo. His pass is intercepted by Terrence Newman.
Wow.
And the Vikings will have it at the 26-yard line as Terrence Newman comes up with his first interception of the season and the 42nd of his incredible NFL career.
LaFell explains what happened.
I left Andy out to draw the interception. I should have kept going. I tried to stop and catch him with my hands instead of continuing to run through and catch him with my body. And I'm the one caused the interception. That was on me. That's not on Andy.
Still quite a moment for 39-year-old former Bengal Terrence Newman. According to Jay Morrison of the Dayton Daily News, Newman is just the fourth player since 1950 to intercept a pass at age 39 or older. The others are Charles Woodson, Darryl Green, and Clay Matthews. Another Forbath field goal made it 27-0, and the Vikings scored for the final time 2 minutes into the fourth quarter by throwing the ball to a former Elder Panther.
Keenan's back to throw, looks back to the left, throws into the end zone. He got a touchdown for Kyle Rudolph against his hometown team.
Well, it was a good call, a throwback pass to the tight end. That's his 8th touchdown reception of the season.
And Kyle Rudolph, the Cincinnati kid, just celebrated with a modified icky shuffle.
He sure did.
At that point, going back to last week's game against the Bears, the Bengals had surrendered a mind-boggling 61 unanswered points. Here again is LaFell.
Last week, get embarrassed at home by the Bears, and we come on the road, and we told everybody, man, if we don't come out here to play, this team will blow us out their arena, because they play very well at home. They're a very good defense, and guys didn't come to play, and that's exactly what happened.
The 34-point lead allowed the Vikings to put in their backup quarterback, Teddy Bridgewater, the first time he's played since suffering a gruesome knee injury prior to last season that was considered career-threatening at the time. Just making it back should be considered a triumph, and hopefully for Bridgewater, there are great things ahead. But his first game back did not follow a Hollywood script.
Bridgewater's in the shotgun. Here comes his first pass in more than a year. Well, he's trying to find time. His pass is intercepted by Sean Williams. Williams running down to the 25, and he will be tackled at the 23-yard line. In fairness to Bridgewater, the pass ricocheted off a teammate's hands, but it was a high throw,
And it went right into the midst of Sean Williams for the interception, and he returned it 7 yards.
A.J. McCarron took over as the Bengals quarterback and led them on a 23-yard drive that allowed Cincinnati to get on the scoreboard.
McCarron hands it off to Giovanni Bernard, and he's into the end zone for a Bengals touchdown. So the interception for Sean Williams leads to the 2-yard touchdown run for Giovanni Bernard, and the Bengals avoid the shutout.
The final score, 34-7 Minnesota. The Vikings wrap up the NFC North for the second time in 4 years under Mike Zimmer. The Bengals fall to 5-9, clinching their second straight losing season. Here's Carlos Dunlap.
Embarrassing. I invest way too much into this, to feel like this after a game, to not even be in a game, in a close game. Like, and I'm not alone in this, obviously. Everybody in this locker room has invested a lot. But, this is crazy to me.
The obvious topic when the locker room opened was the pregame report that Marvin Lewis does not want to return for his 16th season as the Bengals head coach. Dave Lapham was the first person to ask him about it after the game.
It's the same comment we've been making since August. We have no comment about the future. We'll deal with the future when the future comes. My job is to prepare the football team, which, I'm disappointed in how we've played.
Mike Zimmer was asked about it in his post-game news conference.
Yeah, I saw that, but, I don't know that that's the case. I mean, he didn't say anything to me about it before or after the game, and, he came over to see me at the ranch when we were at bye week, and he didn't say anything to me about it then. So, but if it is the case, Marvin is an unbelievable person, great mentor, great football coach. I hope that's not the case, because the NFL would be losing a great coach.
Here's player reaction from Giovanni Bernard and A.J. Green.
We just didn't play well at the end of the day. But people are going to obviously talk about the report being the reason why. I don't think that was the reason why at all. A lot of guys didn't even know that till Marvin said afterwards.
I'm not sure that people necessarily think that that was the reason why, but it is strange. I mean, does it affect you personally?
No. Nope. At the end of the day, I'm playing for this organization. I'm playing for, the Brown family. At the end of the day, that's what I care about. Putting, good tape, good whatever it is out on that field and winning the game with my teammates. Because, through the blood, sweat, and tears, these are the guys that you go through the entire year with, and you just want to play for each other.
I'm sorry if I'm coming in late, AJ. How did that impact the team, that news?
I don't think it impacted at all. We all professionals here. We have a job to do, and that's what we get paid for.
And they have to earn those paychecks for 2 more weeks, a home game against Detroit and a road game at Baltimore. Here are Green and A.J. McCarron on what they'll be playing for.
My motivation is to be great. I don't need no extra motivation. No matter what the season going like, I'm just going to get everything I got. That's all I know.
I think it's just a pride thing. You want to go out and play with pride and put everything on the line. You don't know what's going to happen in the future, and you want that good tape out there.
Just 2 years ago at this point, the Bengals were 11-3 and heading to Denver with a chance to earn a first-round bye in the playoffs. Now they are playing out the string. Time to bring in Dave Lapham for post-game analysis.
And this was going to be a tough game for the Bengals to win, period. They're injured. The Vikings are terrific. The home crowd, incredible here in Minnesota. But it's a little bit surreal today with the news breaking about 90 minutes before kickoff on ESPN that Marvin Lewis, according to ESPN, intends to look for other opportunities at the end of this year.
Couldn't be worse timing. You're driving over on the bus to come to the game, and players are on social media. I mean, they follow it even more so than anybody, and it's all over social media. So obviously, you talk about distractions, my goodness, couldn't be a bigger distraction. So they obviously didn't have their minds right, heads right going into the game, and they had to play at a high level in order to compete against the Minnesota Vikings, just compete against them, and they didn't. So 1-for-13 on third down was the story of the game. Just could not sustain any drives and defensive breakdowns. McKinnon, Case Keenum probably got 150 yards of pitch and catch, wide open, back releasing out of the backfield. I mean, come on. You can't do those kind of things and expect any different result in a National Football League game. And you're right, the crowd was frenzied, full throat. Their team hadn't been there for a month. They'd only been there twice in the last 2 months. So now they have them two out of the next 3 weeks, and they were ready for a show, and they got one today.
Is it going to be difficult for Coach Lewis in the final 2 weeks of this year now that people can openly speculate about his future?
Yeah, I mean, he's going to have to figure out a way to keep his football team. I mean, I don't know what his next message is going to be to the team, you know, based on what Adam Schefter put out there. I asked him about it after the game, and he said that he'll deal with the future when it is the future. And all we can worry about right now is the present and trying to win football games and play better to win football games and handle the future when the future comes. But there's no doubt that it was the media was all talking about it, obviously. And you think the players weren't? Heck yeah, they were. I mean, Carlos Dunlap was a topic of conversation for all the players because of social media.
I'll tell you what, if the Vikings somehow manage to play Super Bowl 52 on their home field with that defense, they're going to be tough to beat because Mike Zimmer has put together a fast, physical, and ornery defensive unit, and the Bengals' offense struggled to put anything together against it.
Absolutely. I mean, they played lights out. They were in every gap they were supposed to be when they were supposed to be there. That's what they've shown. That's what they've done. If they do play the Super Bowl here, I'm wondering how many fans are actually going to get there. It's a corporate game.
Sure.
You know, the NFL, it's the NFL's game. It's not the Minnesota Vikings game anymore. But it won't be like that. It won't be noisy like that. But I'm sure there'll be a fair share of Minnesota Viking fans there. And if they, you know, playing in that venue, you can sleep in your bed all week. You know, it's unbelievable the advantage that they would have by playing the Super Bowl at their home field. And they're good enough to do it, no question.
Be a scalper's dream, if that's the case.
yeah, no question.
With the loss, the Bengals remain 0 for Minnesota, 0-6 all time. Okay, time to move on. The biggest bright spot of this season, at least in my opinion, has been the celebration of the Bengals' 50th season that's included the return of most of the team's all-time greatest players to home games at Paul Brown Stadium. When fans and media chose the first 50, the list of the top 50 retired players in team history, the top two picks were obvious: Anthony Munoz and Ken Anderson. The former MVP quarterback joined me recently for a Fun Facts interview. And no matter how well you know number 14, I guarantee you're about to learn something new. Time for some fun facts with the greatest quarterback in Bengals history, Ken Anderson, from Batavia, Illinois, not too far from Chicago. I've read that as a kid, you spoke Swedish in the home. Is that correct?
No.
Okay.
Now, my grandparents probably did when my dad was young, but both my grandparents had passed away by the time that I was born. So, no, we did not speak Swedish in my house. But when I went to Augustana College, I did take 2 years of Swedish as my foreign language.
Gotcha. Well, my grandparents are Swedish, so I was going to hit you with some Swedish terms. Repeat.
Ja tala en liten svenska.
And what does that mean?
I speak a little Swedish.
All right, very good. I didn't know that. All right, as maybe some people know, your next-door neighbor and childhood friend was a Basketball Hall of Famer, Dan Issel, the all-time leading scorer at the University of Kentucky. What do you think you two guys did for each other in your athletic development?
Well, you know, I don't think we did anything for each other. I think it was more the collection of guys that we had in our neighborhood to play with. There's Dick Hallman and Tim and Tom Nelson and Bill Ski. You know, those guys were a couple of years older than us. So I think as we went through and from a young age, whether it's Little League and then you get into junior high, that we're always in the summers and in the winters, you know, shoveling off driveways, playing basketball. We're competing with kids that may be a little bit older than us, and I think that was what helped our development.
Basketball announcer, sideline reporter, Craig Sager was at your high school at roughly the same time too, right?
He was. Craig was 2 years younger than I was. He played on my Little League baseball team, and the thing that I remember was one summer, his dad really wanted to be a good baseball player. And he put up a batting cage in his backyard. And he kind of paid me a couple of bucks if I would come over and pitch to Craig and teach him how to hit. Well, that was okay. I mean, a couple of bucks for a kid is you always take that. But he was one of the few people in town that had an in-ground pool, and he had a very attractive older sister. So that was there were perks to the job.
No question about it. We're doing fun facts with Ken Anderson. You went to Augustana College with an enrollment of 2,250 students at the time on a basketball scholarship, not football.
Well, I went there to play basketball. There were no scholarships, per se, athletically at Augustana. As I remember, the tuition and room and board were about $3,000 at that time. I got a state scholarship for academics and financial need. The college could get me $500, and then I had summer jobs to pay for the other. My folks really couldn't help me pay for my college education. But I thought, you know, basketball was my best sport in high school. I was going to play there. I thought my best potential was as a baseball player, and I was going to play baseball at Augustana. And then the summer before I enrolled, my high school football coach talked me into going out for football. The head football coach said, yes, come on out. At Division III, they take warm bodies to fill up the roster. And by the third game of the year, I was starting on the varsity as the quarterback and ended up starting on the varsity in basketball as a freshman and never did play baseball.
You scored more than 1,000 points in basketball, but by the time you were a senior, it sounds like you knew that you had the best chance to play professionally in football. When did that seem like a realistic possibility for you?
Well, you know, in my junior year, scouts started to come around in the spring, and they would test me. We'd go out and we would work out a little bit. So I think most teams were aware of me. If you remember, one of the big announcers in Chicago was Jack Brickhouse, both for the Cubs and the Bears, you know, a nationally known, you know, announcer. His daughter was in my class, and so he would come out for every homecoming year, and he would go back and tell George Halas. He said, you know, I don't know a lot, but he said, there's this kid out of Augustana, may not be too bad of a quarterback. And every year he would go back and tell him about me. Well, after my senior year, the Bears called for tickets to a game. Unfortunately, our season was already over. We only played 9 games.
Now, Mike Brown was among the people that came to Augustana to see you. Do you remember the Bengals watching you?
No question about it. You know, Mike came to a home game. I think it might have been against Wheaton College, and I played pretty well. And in those days, the coaching staff went out on Saturdays to scout. And so the Bengals were playing in Cleveland, and I was playing against Carroll College in Waukesha, Wisconsin. And Bill Walsh was at that game and then caught a flight and went to Cleveland that night. So both of them had scouted me. And of course, then after the season was over, Bill came out and personally worked me out at Augustana.
So the Bengals drafted you in the third round in 71, and you mentioned Bill Walsh. He was your quarterback's coach for your first 5 NFL seasons. What did he do for you?
Well, he gave me the fundamentals of playing the position that lasted a lifetime, not only as a player, but as a coach coaching quarterbacks. Just the attention to detail and fundamentals and the importance of the quarterback's drop, the depth and the steps, timing up with the routes of the receivers to make everything precise and what we were doing. And I remember it goes on, you know, Steve Young once said, you can film me from the waist down and I can tell you if I had a good game because of my footwork. And so that was what Bill was all about. And he made it fun. We worked hard and, you know, I owe him a lot.
We're doing fun facts with Ken Anderson. Let's fast forward to your MVP season in 1981 because it started as horribly as it could have possibly started. Did you think you were going to lose your job in week one?
It could have very well happened. You know, I found out the next day after coming to practice that I was not going to start the next week, and I was not told that. And so I went back down to the Spinney Field and was talking with Forrest Gregg and Lindy Infante and, you know, why didn't you tell me? And, well, there's a lot of things that go into this. And we had a lot of discussions. And Forrest said, see me Wednesday morning, 7 o'clock. And went back in and we talked. And maybe it's best if I came off the bench. The guy that they had drafted to replace me was Jack Thompson. So when I got pulled in the opening game, it was Turk Schonert, our third quarterback, that came in and won the game. I think Jack was not able to play the next week again. I think had he been healthy, I may not have played. But the end result was Forrest said, what do you want to do? And I said, I want to start. And we went and we beat the Jets in a 31-30, I think, was the score. And that kind of was the springboard for the rest of the season.
So you went on to be MVP in 81, led the Bengals to a win over the Bills for the first playoff victory in franchise history. And that takes you to the Freezer Bowl. What are your most vivid memories weather-wise of that game?
Just how cold it was. You know, I was always up early and, you know, it was a sunny day, and, you know, I'm going to go out, have a cup of coffee, read the paper before pregame meal, and, And so I kind of just stepped outside the door of the hotel and go, whoa, this is some serious cold. And then, you get down to the stadium and you kind of have your warm-up routine. And well, let me change. I can do a little bit more inside this game. But, you know, Forrest Gregg's his pregame talk was, as I remember, you know, men, it's a lot like going to the dentist. You know it's going to hurt, but you got to go anyway. But my most vivid memory of the game is I'm sitting on the bench in the first quarter, and they brought in heated benches. And we had never seen those before. And they had the little slots that you put your feet in, and I'm sitting on my hands. And luckily, I've got my helmet on because there's a big roar. And I stand up to see if there's a turnover if we're going back on the field. My feet don't come out of the slots. I go down, and the first thing that hits is my face mask, and I'm seeing stars, and I'm calling for Marv Polland, our trainer. I need smellings. Give me something. I can't get knocked out of the championship game falling off the gosh dang bench.
So you led the Bengals to the victory over the Chargers. Then it was on to Super Bowl 16 against San Francisco, down 20-0 at the half. He came back and made it a game, wound up losing 26-21. Does it still hurt this many years later?
Well, probably hurts more now than it did at the time. We were a really good football team, and I thought this was the start. We're going to go back again the next year. And, of course, the next year was a strike-shortened year, but we still had the best record in the league, or tied for the best record in the league the next year. Well, we get beat in the first round of the playoffs by the Jets, and we never made it back again. And so I think the disappointing thing is that we didn't play our best that game, and certainly I didn't. When you've got five turnovers as a team and two interceptions from me, that's hard to overcome and win a football game.
A couple more fun facts with Ken Anderson. You have a Super Bowl ring as the quarterback's coach for the Steelers, Mike Tomlin's Steelers in 2009. Is it a little bit strange to look down at your Super Bowl ring and see a Steelers logo?
Well, that's why it never leaves Hilton Head and comes to Cincinnati. It never comes back to Cincinnati. But they were very good to me, and that was a fun place to be. You know, it's so sad that Dan Rooney passed away not long ago. He was very gracious to me. Mike Tomlin, you know, kept me in the league so I could get my coach's retirement. I had a great quarterback to work with in Ben Roethlisberger. And I always tell people, there are more similarities between the Steelers organization and the Bengals organization than there are differences. Mm-hmm. And it was always tough when you had to play them, you know, on the other side. And my son Matt is as big a diehard Bengal fan as there is, but he always wanted to support his dad. And when he came to that last Steelers game and he knew I was going to retire, he walked back and went across the street and took off all of his Steelers gear and gave it away, said, "I'll never put that on again."
He's a smart kid. You raised him well.
No question.
I really appreciate this. Thanks so much, Ken.
Thank you very much. Been a pleasure.
Coming up at this week's game at Paul Brown Stadium, the players being honored include Bob Trumpy and my pal, Dave Lapham. That's going to do it for this episode of the podcast. If you haven't done so already, don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. And give it a rating or leave a comment. It would be great to know how many of you are listening and what you think. I'm Dan Hoard. Thanks for listening to the Bengals Booth Podcast.